Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Welcome to Burning Daylight, the only podcast for the working cowboy.
Well, howdy there, daylight burners. I rearranged my recording setup here, so I'm still trying to figure out how to look at the camera. Anyway, welcome to the Farm and Ranch Report. This is Monday, February 19th, 2024. So if you're listening on Patreon, you're listening to it live. The rest of y'all be a day or two behind, but, for the purposes of this show, you'll be all right. The commodity quote's gonna be outdated, but we'll start with that. I hope y'all had a good weekend, by the way. We've had some pretty decent moisture. Nothing like last year, but thank God that was miserable. We've had it in little spurts, enough to make it kind of wet and sloppy, but once again, nothing like last winter. So, so this is from National Beef Wire. As of Friday afternoon, on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, live cattle traded at one, or they finished out at 187.55. That's up 195. Feeder cattle at 251.025. Holy shit, that's up 3.925. Man, they're high. Hogs, they finished up 2.225 at 85.225. And on the grain side, corn finished down 125 at 4.165. Soybeans up 10 bucks at 11.7225. Wheat finished down 6.5 at $5.60.05. Soybean meal was up 6.10 at 3.45.60. The Dow finished down 155.18. NASDAQ was down 134.75. S&P was down 25.38. And it's the note here, stocks fall and bond yields climb as strong U.S. PPI curbs rate cut hopes. So inflation still sucks. They're not going to cut interest rates. At least for a little, probably not till the summer, I'd imagine. Gotta cook them books for the election. But this is not necessarily a politics show, so we'll stay out of that. Crude oil is up $1.05 at $79.08. Ethanol is down 0.005. Natural gas was up slightly, 0.027. And crude oil rises on geopolitical risks in the Middle East. Mostly to do with shipping. The Houthis have got people pretty well spooked of using the Red Sea and therefore the Suez Canal. So a lot of ships due to insurance rates and just the overall risk of getting hit with a drone or a cruise missile is causing them to divert around the Horn of Africa. Let's see. Weather report. A fast-moving storm will produce accumulating snow from upstate New York into portions of New England today. Widespread lake effect snow showers will be expected on the Great Lakes through Saturday. Accumulating snow is also expected from the Central Plains to the Mid-Atlantic. The West will remain active into early next week with several rounds of rain and mountain snow. So we were pretty low on snowpack this year. I think we're only at like 65% of normal. And then, we've been getting hit with this atmospheric river or whatever the term is for it. And, the El Nino cycle hasn't let us down. It's pumping in some moisture. So we need it. Still a little bit lower. I think the southern part, the southwest down in Arizona, they're kind of right around normal snowpack after this last round. So they'll probably have a good year. Cash trade's down $2 at 180. Thus far for Friday, the Southern Plains negotiated cash trade has been mostly inactive on light demand. Southern Plains most recent live FOB purchases was Wednesday at $180. Nebraska negotiated cash trade has been mostly inactive on light demand. I swear I'm not drunk. I don't know why I'm getting the esh in there. The most recent live FOB purchases were Thursday at $180, with dress delivered purchases mostly at $287. Western Corn Belt negotiated cash trade has been slow on light demand. Most recent live FOB purchases were Thursday from 180 to 182, with dress deliveries traded at 285. Cattle on feed. It's been a while since I did one of these reports, but the January numbers, cattle and calves on feed for slaughter market in the United States feedlots with capacity of 1,000 head or more totaled 11.9 million head as of January 1st, 2024. The inventory was 2% above January 1, 2023. The inventory included 7.2 million steer calves, up 2% from the previous year. I made that joke about glitching like Mitch, and it's wearing off on me. Glitched out trying to read 2023. I'm also just not a very good out loud reader, so bear with me. This group accounted for 60% of the total inventory. Heifers and heifer calves accounted for 4.74 million, up 2% from 2023. Placements in the feedlot during December totaled 1.7 million head, 4% below 2022. Net placements were 1.64 million head during December. Placements of cattle and calves weighing less than 600 pounds were 440,000 head. Six weights were 410,000. Seven weights were 380,000. Eight weights were 279,000. Nine weights, 110,000 head, and 1,000 and up was 85,000. Marketings of fed cattle during December totaled 1.73 million head, or 1% below 2022. Other disappearance totaled 60,000 head during December, 11% above 2022. Drought monitor. Last week, another round of Pacific storms swept across the West, bringing rain and mountain snow, as I mentioned before. Storms left over 3 feet of snow in the northern Arizona mountains before dropping more of a foot of snow in the mountains of Colorado and New Mexico. After a slow start to the year, basin snowpack in the Southwest has returned to near normal conditions. Southwestern states saw improvement to short and long-term drought conditions. In the Northwest, basin snowpack remains below normal, with some of the worst conditions in the northern Rocky Mountains. So we are in this little corner of Nevada here. If you can see my cursor, there's Lake Tahoe and we're down here. So we're in a abnormally dry, so not quite in a drought. Coming out of it, so like I said, the snowpack has increased over the past week or so, and looks like we'll continue to get some more. So it'll probably be a good year if I had to guess. Beef sales were down 19% from the previous week and 18% from the prior 4 week average. Beef production down 3%. And let's see what Dr. Andrew Griffith has to say on the livestock comments. One may even predict calf prices will not decline much seasonally in the fall due to the lower quantity of calves that will be available compared to the past several years. The market may be more intriguing. The market that may be more intriguing is the female market, including bred heifers, bred cows, and even open cows. Industry participants often come to an acceptable value on bred heifers, as this is a common transaction. Breeding stock's going to get really expensive, I would imagine, as the drought tapers off. I would bet you can kind of expect, a lot like, was it 2014, towards the end of the drought in the Great Plains area really finally came out of it, and it was a bad drought, and cow herd was way down, and we're down even further than that now, and as the moisture continues, being an El Nino cycle, I can't predict the weather. I'm not a weatherman. I think I'd be good at it, though, just pointing over here. I think I'd be good at it. I don't have the tits for it anymore, though, so probably out on that. It could be a radio weatherman, though, but then you wouldn't get to point. And I mean, you could, but nobody's going to see it. So just do ninja moves while I'm reading the weather. Anyway, that kind of does it for the market report. It's I don't know. It's low cow herd numbers. That's low supply, so it's not a huge surprise really that cattle prices are going to be high. And those female numbers are going to be way up. I remember we sold some bred heifers. That would have been like 2013, 2014 for something like $3,500 a head. And they were nice heifers for sure. Bred to good bulls. The bulls kind of iffy. They were all right, I guess. High dollar anyways. But yeah, it was a stupid amount of money that people were paying, at the time, so I would expect something along those lines. I'm not a market economist or anything like that, but just judging by historical precedents, I suppose that makes a lot of sense to me. So next story here is the EPA allows farmers to use existing dicamba supply amid legal uncertainty. So the decision comes less than a week after a federal court in Arizona revoked approval for three popular weed killers. So I'll just read this story pretty much in full, but it brings up a kind of a lot of issues that American agriculture has, particularly on the grain side of things, but it also on the dairy, and not as much on the beef. I'm not familiar at all with the pork and the chicken industry, other than that they're highly concentrated. So the farm side of things, like the seed the seed companies and whatnot. It's also very concentrated, but the outfits not as much. Like there's a lot more smaller farming operations. I mean, they're fewer every day, but as opposed to like the chicken farmers and the hog farmers, where like the big boys own pretty much all of that. So we'll see. So the U.S. EPA on Wednesday said farmers will be able to use some existing supplies of dicamba-based weed killers after a restrictive court ruling sent producers scrambling to rethink their planting decisions. Dicamba weed killers for genetically modified cotton and soybean can be used or sold if they were, quote, already in possession of growers or in the channels of trade and outside the control of pesticide companies. So if they had already sent them out to the local dealers or the farmers that already purchased the seed that was resistant to dicamba and whatnot, they're essentially saying you can use up the stock that has already left the warehouse. That doesn't say that, like, the stuff that's still in inventory for these companies, I guess, can't be used, but the stuff that they've already sent out to their local dealers and the farmers can go ahead and be used up. Retailers can still sell products in their possession for the 2024 growing season until mid-June or July, depending on the state. The decision comes a little less than a week after a federal court in Arizona revoked approval for three dicamba-based weed killers, saying the EPA violated public comment rules and understated the risks of the herbicide. The weed killers produced by Bayer, Syngenta, and BASF, kind of usual suspects on, the only one not in there is Monsanto, are sprayed on dicamba-tolerant crops and require farmers to purchase genetically modified seeds. Farm groups welcome the decision, saying it provides certainty for the 2024 growing season. Many farmers had already purchased seeds or made planting decisions, and a lack of dicamba could have significantly pushed up production costs. We are grateful to EPA for hearing farmers and ranchers' concerns and addressing them quickly to ensure we have access to critical tools needed to protect our crops this season. American Farm Bureau President Zippy Duval. I like the name, but it's not a really serious name. I don't know if I could take the guy serious, but I do like the name. Come here, Zippy. Let me get you a beer, Zippy. Zippy Duval, hell of a guy. I don't know anything about him. Who had petitioned the agency for an existing stock order, said in a statement, quote, without EPA stepping in, farmers and ranchers across the country were facing uncertainty and financial risk. Dicamba was first allowed to be sprayed on cotton and soybean crops in 2016, and the U.S. Department of Agriculture estimated 43% of, that's a big percentage, 43% of soybean acreage was planted with dicamba-tolerant seeds in 2018. So just 2 years, and they had almost 50% market share of the soybean acreage. So that's wild. Environmental groups have said the expanded use of dicamba has damaged surrounding croplands and natural habitats. I'm not surprised they said that. I do wonder what the dangers are surrounding this particular herbicide. Bayer, BASF, and Syngenta acknowledged the EPA ruling in separate statements, with BASF noting it continues to review its legal options. So somebody will probably appeal that. We welcome the EPA's swift action, a Bayer spokesman said in an email to Agricultural Dive. Our top priority is that growers have seen the products and support they need to have a successful season. So apparently this one got pushed through. So it was in 2016. So that would have been during Obama's administration. Trump didn't take office till 2017. And I wonder if this was one that with Trump's EPA, it would have not made it through. I find that hard to believe. Trump's the pro-business guy. So I would imagine he would want to push it through. I don't know. I don't think Trump knows two shits about agriculture. I don't think most of these people know anything about agriculture, but that's neither here nor there. Or I guess it's kind of everywhere. It's neither here nor there. It's everywhere. Maybe I'll make that a shirt, like make it real fluffy, warm fuzzies type feeling shirt, you know, with rainbows and unicorns and, yeah. And then we'll have that. It's neither here nor there. It's everywhere. And then real small underneath in parentheses, it'll just say dick. Dick is everywhere. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. I don't know exactly what the risk is for using this stuff, but I would lean on the side of it probably is not great. I'm sure it works good. Roundup, glyphosate works really good, but it's also pretty sure it causes cancer. And it's leaching into the groundwater, which it kind of amazes me, a lot of farmers' attitudes when it comes to that. And you're just like, I mean, it says on the label, don't ingest it. And by it leaching in the groundwater, you're kind of almost forced to ingest it. And that's seems like to me, that's not a good thing. But anyways, I would venture to guess there's something about that with this product as well. And, but I don't know, that's just me speculating. I don't know the ins and outs. I don't know the deets. But anyways, it is, authorization has been revoked, but you got one more planting season to get it on there. Moving on, the USDA launches the Climate Corps to advance sustainable agriculture. And all these Democrat presidents just want to be the next FDR and create all these programs that, and just, it's all government jobs. So it's just everybody who doesn't work for the government, and even the people that do, like, even though you're paid by with stolen money, they'll steal money out of that too, so that they can continue to pay your salary and then all the other bullshit that we use. But it just, this is another, like, a New Deal type, and they mention it in here several times. So the Biden administration will mobilize more than 100 young people in partnership with AmeriCorps to help farmers improve soil health and adopt climate smart production practices. So that, luckily there's only 100. But anyway, so get ready for 100 different, probably fat, gender amorphous, purple, blue, green, some sort of wild color of hair, pronouns in their bio, probably introduce themselves with their pronouns, and will most likely get angry if you don't acknowledge the pronouns, just based on the hiring practices of the administration. This is what I'm, and there'll probably be a black lesbian in there, that most likely will know nothing about agriculture. I'd venture to bet like 85 of the 100 or so, I'll call it 85%, that they hire will know nothing about agriculture, but they're going to go educate the American farmer on sustainable practices. The Biden administration is recruiting the next generation of conservation leaders to advance regenerative agriculture and other climate smart farming practices across U.S. farms. USDA on Monday said it will create paid service opportunities for more than 100 young people to promote sustainable agriculture as part of the Working Lands Climate Corps. The initiative is part of the American Climate Corps, an effort to train more than 20,000 young people and prepare them for careers in a clean energy economy. That's lovely. Millions of Americans were put to work in the 1930s to restore the nation's public lands as part of the Civilian Conservation Corps. Now the Biden administration hopes to revive central components of the program to create workforce opportunities for a new generation. So it's just New Deal repackaged. Participants in the Working Lands Climate Corps will conduct outreach and educate farmers about the availability of assistance programs to help transition to climate smart agriculture. So this is from Ali Zaidi, National Climate Advisor to Joe Biden. Says, quote, USDA's Working Lands Climate Corps demonstrates how the president's historic initiative is on the front lines of addressing some of the most urgent challenges facing our agriculture committees, ensuring that farmers and ranchers continue to play a central and growing role in developing an innovative climate solutions. The first cohort of members will serve with state and local organizations that support the adoption of climate smart agriculture practices. The National Association of Conservation Districts will organize trainings for core members on topics including climate smart agriculture practices, conservation and resilience planning, and environmental justice and outreach to farmers and rural communities. So there you go, environmental justice, which means you gotta get all the gays in there. You gotta get all the browns, but not the ones that work in the field, but the other browns that are doing outreach or something. You gotta get the blacks in there. Same way though, not the actual working farmers, black farmers or farmhands. No, it'll be some college educated sociology degree or gender studies or whatever liberal arts degree there is, and they'll be preaching to you constantly about equity and carbon credits or something. Who knows what this training is going to be, but I bet you it'll deal with just about everything except farming and ranching. Would be my guess anyways. Call me cynical, but that'd be my guess. USDA is one of the seven agencies that signed a memorandum of understanding to create the American Climate Corps, an initiative which puts young people on the paths to jobs in conservation, clean energy, and climate resilience. Climate resilience. What does that mean? Like, we should be teaching human resilience because the climate is what it is. I mean, maybe we have some effects on the ground, but we don't really change the weather, as far as I know. People can correct me if I'm wrong on that, but like I said, I've used this example many times, but I think I stand by it. It's pretty demonstrable event in human history where we definitely made the effects of the weather way worse than they would have been normally with the Dust Bowl plowed up all the topsoil in the Great Plains. And then the rain shut off and the wind turned on, and it was real shitty for about a decade, longer, but the real bulk of it lasted about a decade. And that it was not good. Not good. I mean, so much so that, I mean, it really made an impression on the people that lived through it. I mean, it's part of culture in the Great Plains. So, but I don't know what climate resilience means. Like, the climate's going to do what it does. I think we should be teaching, climate resilient farming, maybe. I mean, that, like, drought resistant crops, all that, water retention, building up of the topsoil. I think a lot of these regenerative farming practices are probably really good. But you can kind of count on when the federal government gets involved, they're gonna fuck it up somehow. Uh, More than 50,000 young people have expressed interest in the Climate Corps program since it was announced in September. Bet you they're all activists. USDA's Natural Resources Conservation Service is spearheading the Working Lands Program in partnership with AmeriCorps, the Corps Network, and the Association, National Association of Conservation Districts. Born amid the Dust Bowl crisis of the 30s, Civilian Conservation Corps revitalized farmlands across the nation. Today, farmers are facing a new threat, climate change and droughts, said AmeriCorps CEO Michael Smith, adding that the program will, quote, mobilize Americans across the country to restore soil health, promote sustainable farming practices, and tackle the disproportionate impacts that climate change has on the farming industry and our food. What sounds like you could get your, just based off of the dicamba stuff, one of the things you could do is make sure that the EPA and the FDA and all these organizations that are supposed to determine whether stuff is safe could do a better job of actually determining whether stuff is safe. So then you don't have this crisis where you have almost half of the soybean growers, almost half of the acreage shift over to these seeds that are dicamba resistant, only to have the rug pulled out from under them, you know, 7-8 years later, which is what happened here. And I don't really blame the farmers on this, because they're going with what they know. Like, hey, this is gonna really save a lot of time, save a lot of money, and I get that 100%. And they're going off the fact that the EPA pushed it through, and now it's, you know, considered safe. It's approved for use, and now just nope, no sir, you guys didn't do it right. And I won't be surprised if it gets if they go ahead and put it back on the market at some point. But I don't know. That seems like a bigger issue than a lot of this stuff. Like, you know, that would make more of a difference than sending 100 lefties out into rural America to get mad at a bunch of old farmers because they don't use your pronouns and they don't want to hear somebody who's never worked on a farm lecture them about the virtues of sustainable regenerative farming or whatever. Like I said, call me a cynic, but I imagine that one's gonna be not well received. So this next topic is the FDA is to withdraw policy on animal feed additives, slashing red tape for startups. As new companies develop breakthrough to tackle climate change, the agency is streamlining the process to bring those innovations to market. The FDA on Friday said it intends to pull a policy governing approval of animal feed additives, opening up the market for startups that make supplements to reduce cattle emissions or enhance food safety. The agency Center for Veterinary Medicine will withdraw its policy manual for regulating additives, which was meant to determine whether supplements should be legally classified as food or drugs. The move is a part of a larger administrative effort to streamline the approvals process for innovative feed additives. So they're going to withdraw its policy manual for regulating additives. I wonder if that means Zilmax comes back on the market. Or is it just for startups and these new feed additives? Because if you remember, Zilmax was a beta agonist, is what it's classified as. It was a 3-day withdrawal on it, and it was cactus, and I know there's a lot of other feedlots that used it. Optiflex was another version of that. It was not the same thing, but it was pretty similar. But essentially what it did, you put your cattle on about a month before slaughter, and it flipped a switch in the cell that made made it produce protein cells rather than fat cells. So your cattle would get would yield a lot better. You'd have a lot less fat on them. I mean, you'd still get the marbling, but you would get a lot more get a lot more meat on the bone. The test showed it was like it made the meat slightly tougher, but it wasn't really noticeable on average. So, but then there was a big mess up where I think it was a withdraw date got fudged somewhere, and a set of cattle that were not clear to slaughter ended up getting shipped and slaughtered. And because of that, they ended up pulling it off the market. So I wonder if that will apply anywhere here. I don't know. Producers commonly use additives such as probiotics and prebiotics to boost animal health. However, as livestock producers face pressure to take action on sustainability, a new class of startups has emerged focused on slashing emissions through other changes to animal diets. CH4 Global, which has developed a seaweed-based supplement to reduce methane from cow burps, said in a statement that the FDA's policy on additives has had created multi-year approval delays. The agency's withdrawal is a major milestone for U.S. agriculture that brings the company closer to commercializing its product. Regulatory advancements such as the recent one made by the FDA will open new doors for products like ours, enabling us to contribute more significantly to global efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, empower farmers to unlock new revenue streams, and support sustainable farming practices, the company said in a statement. I don't know how that empowers farmers to unlock new revenue streams unless you're going to be a seaweed farmer. I don't know. I also wonder if this has any effect on the hemp-based feed that several people, I know Colorado State did a big study on it, so... I wonder if that has any effect, on there, cause that's a new and innovative, feed additive. So I guess that remains to be seen. The FDA is working with Congress on a clear regulatory pathway for additives that reduce pathogens, affect byproducts of the digestive process, or impact the microbiome of an animal. Lawmakers in December introduced the Innovative Feed Act, which would create a new category of animal feed and provide manufacturers with clear regulatory guidance. I strongly doubt that. Moving on to the meat side of things, there's been a slew of state laws passed over the past year or so, either banning or regulating how lab-grown meat is labeled. I think Florida banned it outright. The Italians banned it, and there's been several other states in the U.S. that have passed some sort of law, either banning it completely or passing a labeling you're not allowed to label it as meat. If I recall correctly. State lawmakers around the country have introduced laws to prohibit the sale of alternative protein, but proponents of the namesake product say their tactics are unconstitutional. So the fake meat people are pushing back on all this. The cultivated meat industry made great progress in 2023, with July marking its official regulatory green light when the USDA and FDA gave Upside Foods and Eat Just permission to sell in the U.S. Since then, though, the space has yet to make significant gains as capital funding has been drying up and the cost of production remains high. Since approval, both companies began selling their product at exclusive restaurants in the U.S., Upside Foods at Bar Kren in San Francisco, and Eat Just at China Chilcano, a Jose Andres restaurant in the nation's capital. As of this week, though, neither restaurants serve the product. Womp, womp, womp. Since the industry's first introduction on the market, consumer education has been on high on the list when it comes to priorities. And recent backlash from both legislators and organizations may show that companies have a lot of educating still to do. A growing list of states have introduced legislation that focuses on the labeling of cultivated meat. Arizona was the most recent to do so in January with a bill that sought to prohibit the labeling of any products as meat that is not derived from livestock or poultry and instead were produced in a laboratory from cultured animal cells. This reflects a... So this is from Jack Hubbard, the executive director for the Center... of the Center for the Environment and Welfare. This reflects a growing chorus of voices concerned about lab-grown meat, the lack of long-term health and nutritional studies, and the use of immortalized cells. Immortalized cells, that's a weird, weird term. Immortalized, so they don't die? You made them immortal? How do we do that? Can I get some of that for myself? Like lab-grown Matt McKinley. That'd be a fucking nightmare, wouldn't it? Hubbard also said, as the industry matures, you may see an unlikely partnership with parents, natural food advocates, and farmers in the agricultural community, and people skeptical of something like this to come together and spark debates and discussion. I think that's absolutely true. I've noticed a lot over, and I've been talking about it for shit coming up on 5 years now. I've been doing this podcast, and I remember pounding the table early on in some of these episodes about the direct to consumer stuff, because I saw a clear market adjustment where people are starting to get more and more distrustful of the big conglomerates, you know, whether it's Walmart or Kroger or, you know, McDonald's, any of this stuff there. And then also of the USDA and who sets the nutritional guidelines for the school lunch program and all that stuff. You know, we had the food pyramid growing up, which, you know, said you needed to have like 11 servings of grain every day, which is like, that's not good for you. That's really, really not good for you. That's way, way too much bread and pasta. And what, where they, you really get it is like Pop-Tarts and just bullshit like that. Stuff that's essentially poison. It tastes really good. Don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking the taste, but nutritionally, it's not good for you. But I've become way more hippie-ish when it comes to my food over the past several years, because you look around and you see the amount of people that are just like truly obese, like the amount of people on little motor carts in the electric scooters in Walmart and the grocery stores, and just the amount of overweight people in general, just fat people everywhere. And I'm fat shaming. I think maybe we need some more fat shaming, but I'm not trying to talk shit really. I'm just saying that it's true. It's very noticeable when you get out and about. So I've made it a concerted effort to not allow my kids to eat a whole lot of that nonsense, because I don't want them to have, you know, childhood obesity. And and then made a concerted effort to focus on physical fitness, because it helps you live longer and you're able to do more stuff. It's like there is literally no drawback to it. Sure, you could get injured, but you're less likely to get injured the more in shape you are. So it just like there's literally no downside to lifting weights and running and just moving your body in some form or fashion to break a sweat. It's there's no downside. But with it, you gotta watch what you eat too. And it's really tough, because most of the food out there that's produced here in America is just it's really not great for the processed stuff in particular. So the more you have like whole foods, you know, fresh vegetables, meat that you know, like whole cuts and hamburger and stuff, and particularly from a source that you know and trust, it's becoming more than just a fad. People are really concerned about it. Of course, price plays a big part in that, but there's been a lot of progress towards that, and you have some kind of strange bedfellows with hippies and like white suburban Karens that are also legitimately concerned about their kids' well-being. So they're going to farmers markets and they're trying to find stuff that's raised local, and I think that's a good thing. You know, there's a lot of operations that are not set up to do to market their stuff that way, but I would encourage them to figure out what they need to do to change that, at least to have some sort of their operation shifted that way. I mean, it's a relatively untapped market for the most part, and I think that market share is going to grow, particularly as the millennials are now the majority or the biggest share of the purchasing power. You know, my generation is now in their mid 30s to mid 40s, and it common sense will tell you like that if it's the millennials that are driving this kind of farm to table type of approach, and they're the biggest share of the market, like you might have to change the way you market your stuff. It just, I don't know. So you, with that comes you, you get your gruff farmers and ranchers that are used to not dealing with city people, now actively have to deal with city people to sell their products. Should they, so I mean, take somebody like John O'Day. I bet he sells some stuff in the Denver area, and I bet some of those people he's not really looking forward to talking to at times. But if you establish a good customer base there, and that then that leads to word of mouth, and word of mouth's the best advertising. I don't know. It's just it's a fascinating cycle that we're going through, and it's there's kind of a big push to go back towards traditional old school agriculture with that's more of a natural based stuff. So it's I think this Hubbard guy was right on the mark when he said that it's, you know, you see an unlikely partnership, and I think that's true. So he says most of the coverage around cultivated meat thus far has been about the intersection of technology and food, and not enough on the questions that I think consumers will want to be answered. The use of immortalized cells in food has been done before, and the environmental benefits of cultivated meat are worth questioning as well. Yeah, like what's the energy? What's the energy process to cook one of those fake steaks? I don't know. CEW launched a campaign in December 2023 to educate the public about technology used to develop cultivated meat. The campaign also features a website, labmeat.com, a video addressing how the product is manufactured, and paid digital ads on Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. Twitter, formerly known, or X, formerly known as Twitter. Debate and discussion is warranted, especially now, and I think that no one more than consumers will benefit from that discussion, said Hubbard. So, well put, sir. I think that's I'm generally opposed to the banning of it, unless it's like truly toxic. But I think it's it does raise alarms, because you see how these big ag corporations tend to go. They find something that's cheap, and then like it makes a lot of sense for these packers to invest in this technology, because if they can just grow their own meat in these labs, then they don't have to deal with the cattlemen anymore. And that's the biggest thorn in their side is the cattlemen. And granted, they've gained the system so that it, I mean, even the cattlemen are not much of a threat to them anymore because the system is so rigged in their favor. But, yeah, if they don't have to deal with them at all, I'm sure they'd love that. And then that, it just, that leads to a whole set of problems. I mean, but it could lead to the, like a whole separate, like sub market of traditional, you know, meat products where they actually come from an animal, or the animal is grown rather than just an individual cut of meat. So I don't know. It's a strange one, but I think the market will have the best chance of solving that, because I truly believe that most people are not gonna want it to eat lab grown meat. I think they're not real comfortable with that yet. I don't know. I could be wrong, but I think the uphill side is on their end rather than people that grow meat animals. Moving on. This one's kind of gross. But I mean, it's Tyson, so what'd you expect? Tyson rejects shareholder call for an audit into child labor allegations. Despite an investigation from the U.S. Department of Labor, critics have accused the meat and poultry processing giant of not taking the claims seriously enough. Shareholders and labor groups are accusing Tyson Foods of not taking seriously enough reports of children being employed at some of its meatpacking plants. The meat and poultry processing giant, along with competitor Purdue Farms, are under federal investigation for alleged violations by the U.S. Department of Labor. Last week, Tyson held a shareholder meeting at its headquarters in Arkansas. Members from the labor advocacy group Venceramos, which protested at the company last October in response to the child labor allegations, attended the meeting. Faith-based organization, the American Baptist Home Mission Society, a Tyson shareholder, was also in attendance. Both groups demanded the company conduct an audit into child labor at its plants and provide more transparency about how it is combating the issue. Quote, the recent revelations of illegal middle school child labor in Tyson's plants performing and being injured from hazardous cleaning duties, combined with allegations of vulnerable immigrant children catching chickens at Tyson's contracted chicken farms, are unacceptable. The ABHMS said in a statement. I was just picturing a little Guatemalan kid just furiously chasing chickens around in one of those big chicken houses. It's not funny. It's sad. It's kind of funny. The image anyways. But as far as this goes, like they're essentially using child slave labor to clean their plants. It's a contractor that hired on, and they found like a 13-year-old girl that got injured while doing like a late night deep clean of the plant, if I remember correctly. And that could be speculation on my part, because just from my personal experience in the meatpacking industry, it was for a company that produced lean, finely textured beef or pink slime. I wasn't in the kill plan itself, but when we did the cleaning of our plant there, it was at like 4 o'clock in the morning, and and it was all people who were of age that worked there at the time. It was like a 13-year-old girl, and the chemicals they use are really, really pretty dangerous. I mean, you got to have like a full wetsuit and, you know, chemical resistant wetsuit. You got to have goggles. I mean, the whole nine yards, because it's It's very caustic chemicals. So, yeah, and who knows where this girl came from? Like, did she get smuggled across the border by a coyote? Did she get put together with a random assembly of people that, you know, resembled a family, and so they get preferential treatment at the border, and then she gets picked up on the other side by some sleazy asshole that has a contract with these Tyson plants, and they don't really care how he gets his labor. They're just like, ah, here, we're gonna pay you. You bring the crew in and do your thing. And it turns out it's a bunch of illegal immigrant kids doing the work. Like it's pretty fucking gross. And you see it a lot in the dairy business too, with they're heavily dependent on migrant labor, or immigrant labor, and a lot of times illegal immigrant labor. They're checking papers, but chances are these people have somebody else's papers. It's a whole deal. I mean, it's an ugly business. Different parts of the ag business. So, and this is just one example, but at the meeting last Thursday, Tyson investors voted not to conduct a further audit into its child labor prevention efforts, and a majority voted against the proposal. Magali Lacoye, the director of Vincermos, said in an interview that Tyson did not engage with investors who wanted to ask questions about the proposed audit at the meeting. She also stated the company did not provide paper to write down questions. It's pretty much just 20 minutes, chop, chop, chop. It's all done, Lacoye said. It's not really a space for the company to engage with investors. In an emailed statement, a Tyson spokesperson dismissed Vincermos' allegations. The company characterized Lacoye's assertion that there were no pens and papers available for attendees as simply false. Tyson maintains that it has a zero tolerance policy for child labor. So you'd think if you got these allegations, you'd want to do an investigation. This tells me that like nothing's going to come of it. The Department of Labor is going to slap them with a fine or something. And they don't want to do an internal investigation because then they're going to have to produce a report. So they just vote that down and let the Department of Labor do what they're gonna do, and some palms will probably get greased, and Tyson will get a little slap on the wrist, and they'll continue operating as normal, status quo. So that would be my guess. Next story here is Congress must act on Prop 12 to avoid chaos in the marketplace, says Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. The Agriculture Secretary expressed doubt that lawmakers could effectively tackle the issue without running into difficult questions about states' rights. This is an interesting one. So Prop 12 was that measure in California that it was a referendum or state question, and so the voters passed it, and it outlawed farrowing crates in pork, and then it was taken to court and eventually went up to the Supreme Court, where they ruled in favor of California on Prop 12, and saying, well, we'll get into the story here. They discuss it a little bit. The U.S. meat market could descend into chaos unless federal lawmakers take action on state animal welfare requirements, such as California's Prop 12, Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack said at a congressional hearing on Wednesday. Proposition 12, which governs housing requirements for pigs, was approved by California voters in 2018 and upheld by the Supreme Court in 2023. As more states regulate farm production practices, there is a possibility of 50 different sets of rules and regulations, which obviously creates concerns for producers, Vilsack said. If we don't take the issue seriously, we're going to have chaos in the marketplace, Vilsack said, because there's nothing preventing any state from doing what California does. Pork producers say California and others pursuing animal welfare requirements are running afoul of interstate commerce rules that restrict states from impairing trade outside their boundaries. Cost to comply with a single state's regulation, stakeholders say, could lead to price volatility across the entire U.S. market. The pork industry is already grappling with weak demand and high supply, a situation exacerbated by difficulties entering the California market in the wake of Prop 12. Producers unable to sell their products in California have flooded the market in other states, dampening prices, according to House Agriculture Chairman Glenn Thompson. However, as the Supreme Court ruled last May, only Congress can regulate interstate commerce, although lawmakers have discussed addressing the industry's Prop 12 concerns in an upcoming farm bill. Vilsack expressed doubt that Congress could tackle the issue without opening up more difficult conversations around states' rights. Quote, it is a little bit difficult to create consistency within this Congress and within this country on this issue of states' rights, Vilsack said, because if you apply this standard, you're going to have to discuss some of the more difficult issues, social issues, guns, abortion, etc. So I don't know what he's proposing they do. Like, I don't know what his guidance as the Secretary of Agriculture is. I know, like, standardize it, but are you going to standardize it in favor of California? Or are you going to standardize it in favor of everyone else? I don't know what to think on this this farrowing crate deal, because I'm not a pig guy. It seems like they have a legitimate purpose, but you know, they raise pigs for eons before the invention of the farrowing crate and got along just fine, I suppose. I'm probably not as efficient, but I don't know. I'm gonna reserve judgment on it, except for the fact that it's California doing it, so I'm pretty much always a no on anything that the California government proposes, and or these like state referendums that they push through, because they vote to impose taxes on themselves all the time. It astounds me. But so based off of that, this tells me that Prop 12 sucks. But I will say, It raises some economic opportunities for people in Oregon. I don't know what Oregon's laws are, but Nevada, Arizona, right on the state line of California, just set up a pork booth and maybe sell it at like a lower level. And I don't know, it would be considered bootlegging, taking it back across California state lines. Dude. That's a great movie idea. Like, remake Smokey and the Bandit, but with a hog trucker. Yeah. Yeah, and then they've got, so I mean, the story writes itself. We could do something. Anybody want to work on this project with me? I'm going to Porky and the Bandit. Yeah, Porky and the Bandit. Fuck. We got a winner here, guys. Porky and the Bandit. That's the next big hit trucker movie. I know a lot of you dirtbag truckers will love it, because you don't get a lot of shine until recently. I mean, you had like the Canadian trucker protest, and there's been like some supposed other American trucker protests going to happen, and they didn't really pan out. But you truckers are mostly dirtbags, so I have a feeling you'll like this movie. It's gonna be dedicated to you dirtbags. I mean, because we're going for like the dirtiest of the dirtbags, hog truckers, Porky and the Bandit. I amaze myself with my brilliance sometimes, and I don't say that often. I'm not a braggart, but that's a good idea, Porky and the Bandit. A yet to be released preliminary analysis of the by the U. Wow, let's start over. Son of a bitch. I swear I'm not drunk. not, this is water, straight water. A yet-to-be-released preliminary analysis by the USDA shows certain pork prices have risen as much as 41% since Prop 12 was implemented on January 1st, Thompson said. I'm telling you, roadside pork stands on the right on the California line, Porky and the Bandit, westbound and down, you know, you just got a crazy methed-out hog trucker out running a bunch of Smokies, you know, through the Nevada desert, just hauling ass. Just, I mean, and then you will have a Tesla as the Bandit car, you know, the blocker, but it doesn't work out. Hijinks ensue because the battery dies, and then they're in Ely, Nevada, and there's no Tesla charging station, and then they find an old Trans Am in Ely, Nevada, and hijinks ensue. I mean, come on, the story writes itself. Porky and the Bandit. Porky and the Bandit. Bill Sachs said the USDA has made some efforts to provide relief to the pork industry, with the agency purchasing $100 million worth of products in its feeding programs. The USDA is also focused on building up local and regional farm supply chains, which allow smaller producers to lean away from a national distribution model. All right, well, that I can get behind. I saw the other day that the USDA is going to allow, like, remote grading of beef and or of meat products in general, and so, like, that's one of the big things of interstate commerce, is you have to have a USDA inspection to be able to sell your meat across state lines at a retail level, and to do that you have to have a USDA inspection. Thomas Massey introduced the Prime Act here a couple of years ago. I was a big advocate for it, and it made a lot of sense, which means it went nowhere. But the more we can bolster, like, these small and mid-sized packing plants to do more business in their local communities, that makes the overall food supply chain more resilient. As we saw during COVID, it's pretty fragile when you throw a big shock to the system. Everything's fragile, but when you have only a small number of these giant packing plants doing the bulk of the processing of the country's meat products, it presents a real problem when you have a deal like COVID going around. So, anything they can do to shore up that, I'm in favor of. So, then he says, I think we're going to go through a bumpy period here where farmers have to basically make a decision about whether they're going to participate in that market or whether they're going to be more localized, Bill Sachs said. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. Is it going to hurt? Going to suck? Probably. But overall, I don't know. I think it'll lead to good stuff. So, next story here is from the Fence Post. Arizona rancher files suit alleging Antiquities Act abuse. Arizona rancher Chris Heaton of the Y Cross Ranch has filed a suit in the U.S. District Court against the Biden administration, claiming their use of the Antiquities Act to designate 1 million acres of land in Arizona as a national monument. Heaton owns his family's 48,063-acre ranch, much of which is within the 917,618-acre ancestral footprints monument. Pacific Legal Foundation attorney Frank Garrison said the purpose of the Antiquities Act is to protect sites such as Native American archaeological sites and not, quote, to give presidents unlimited power to declare vast swaths of land and sea out of bounds for productive use, end quote. This is from Rachel Gable. She's got a, I forget what her podcast is called. It's an ag podcast. I listened to a couple episodes. Pretty decent. Let me see if I can find it here. Listen, or I subscribe to too many podcasts. I don't listen to a lot of these, but anyhow, I was going to give her a shout out because I think they do a pretty good job. I listened to a couple episodes and then I haven't listened back to it since, but the two that I listened to were pretty good. There we go. It's called the Pro Ag Podcast. So shout out to her. She's been doing a lot of good reporting on the wolf situation in Colorado, which I didn't cover today, but it's on my radar. I will continue to report on it as stuff comes up. I know there's been sightings and such of those collared wolves in Moffett County, which is quite a ways from where they were released. So maybe that'll be a story I'll bring back up next week. So I'll stay tuned for that. The Antiquities Act of 1906 has been used by presidents of both parties as an instrument to preserve and protect critical, natural, historical, and scientific resources on federal lands. After signing it into law, President Roosevelt used the Antiquities Act 18 times to establish national monuments. Those first monuments included what are now known as Grand Canyon National Park, Petrified Forest National Park, Chaco Culture National Historic Park, Lassen Volcanic National Park, Humacacori National Historic Park, and Olympic National Park. According to the Department of the Interior, since President Roosevelt, 16 presidents have used the act over 150 times to establish or expand national monuments. Congress may also pass legislation designating national monuments. Currently, the National Park Service manages 83 national monuments. Bureau of Land Management administers 25, blah, blah, blah. According to the act, the president is to reserve, quote, the smallest area compatible with the proper care and management of the objects to be protected, end quote. Congress limited the president's authority by requiring congressional authorization for extensions or establishment of monuments in Wyoming. Litigation led to the Wyoming statutory prohibition in 1950 after displeasure with Franklin Delano Roosevelt proclaimed Jackson Hole National Monument in 1943, which later became Grand Teton National Park. According to a release from the Pacific Legal Foundation, in creating the Ancestral Footprints National Monument, President Joe Biden designated entire landscapes, species, plants, and many other objects that go well beyond the scope of the Antiquities Act. This loose definition of object is far beyond what the Antiquities Act permits. The million acres encompassed by the monument flouts the Act's limit on the size of such designation. Quote, when the Supreme Court declined to hear a previous case challenging a similarly excessive monument designation, Chief Justice Roberts sounded the alarm, noting that a statute permitting the president in his sole discretion to designate as monuments, landmarks, structures, and objects, along with the smallest area of land compatible with their management, has been transformed into a power without any discernible limit to set aside vast and amorphous expanses of terrain above and below the sea, end quote. In Heaton's suit, he alleges, quote, severe regulatory burdens and the threat of criminal penalties for engaging in everyday conduct on the ranch, end quote. The suit claims the proclamation does not satisfy the Antiquities Act's smallest area compatible requirement. The president's action raises highly political and economic issues and transcends any discernible limit on his authority under the Antiquities Act. And the Antiquities Act cannot delegate the president, quote, power without any discernible limit to set aside vast and amorphous expanses of terrain, end quote, as a national monument. Pacific Legal Foundation said, in addition to the new regulatory power that comes with a monument designation, the Antiquities Act threatens criminal penalties for harming or removing any protected objects within the 1 million-acre monument. The monument will undermine and perhaps eliminate Heaton's ability to earn a livelihood from the land. All the while, he faces fines and jail times for simply using public and private property, as his family has done for more than a century. PLF said exceeding limits of the Antiquities Act is simply an abuse of presidential power. According to the suit, the proclamation exposes Heaton to criminal penalties if he appropriates, injures, destroys, or removes any feature of the monument, which includes any object listed or listed but undisclosed within the 917,618-acre designation, including landscapes and anything on those landscapes, end quote. Examples of daily ranch operations that qualify as criminal include removal of tamarack trees to prevent brute siphoning from springs, maintenance and clearing of earthen ponds, using three of the water sources on the ranch for cattle, grazing the grasslands on his ranch, including a ridge named as a protected object that is partially on Heaton's private property, and any removal of rocks or grass from the area. Heaton is seeking a permanent injunction. So it's classic lawfare where you just criminalize everything and prosecute it selectively, but where they took almost 1 million acres, and then they said, oh, that desert backdrop is a national monument, so you can't take that rock and move it over here. You can't take it home. You can't clear out these trees, even though they're using a bunch of your water, and they're not good for grazing cattle. Your cattle brush up in there, and then they're hard to find, and they're sucking water, which that's the lifeblood of your operation is your water supply. So it's it'll be interesting to see how he comes out, because people that have taken on the feds on this issue has typically not come out on top. I know Trump did a little bit to kind of roll this back when he was president. But then his interior secretary, I think he was like a Navy SEAL or something, Zinke, he got caught up in some ethics violations or allegations and typical politician shit. So who knows? We'll see how this goes. But last story that I've got, a couple stories anyways, same topic. Talk about the European farmers, because they have gone like full revolt on the EU. So this is from Reuters. Tractors roll into downtown Prague as Czech farmers join protests. This is February 19th, so that's today. Hundreds of Czech farmers drove their tractors into downtown Prague on Monday, disrupting traffic outside the agriculture ministry as they joined protest against high energy costs, stifling bureaucracy, and the European Union's Green Deal. Farmers across Europe have taken to the streets this year, including in Poland, France, Germany, Spain, and Italy, to fight low prices and high costs, cheap imports, and EU climate change constraints. Czech farmers are planning to join protests this week, although major agricultural associations distanced themselves from Monday's action, in which tractors blocked one lane of a major road through Prague, slowing but not completely snarling traffic. Several hundred whistling and jeering protesters gathered outside the agricultural ministry, yelling shame and resign. We came today mainly because of the bureaucracy around farming. The paperwork is on the edge of what is bearable, the 28-year-old farmer Lucas Melichowski said while in the line of tractors. Another Tim will love this one. I'll have to tell him to listen to this. But another farmer, Wojtek Schwartz, said cheaper imports did not face the same scrutiny as domestic production. Quote, they have a different starting line because we are overseen by a million officials. End quote. The government has said the organizers of Monday's demonstration have little to do with real farming. Well, they got tractors. I mean, they do look pretty new and shiny, but that's not new for farmers. They like their tractors shiny. Quote, today's demonstration does not have much in common with the fight for better conditions for farmers. Prime Minister Peter Fiala said on X social media platform, adding some of its organizers were pro-Russian and had other political aims. Of course, you gotta throw the Russian boogeyman in there as well. We are negotiating with those who represent farmers, Fiala said, meaning the giant companies. The Agrarian Chamber, or AK, plans protests alongside other European farmers at border crossings on Thursday and was not part of Monday's tractor protest. Its main complaints are EU farm policy, market distortions, and low purchase prices coming from surpluses amid cheap imports from outside the bloc. Farmers also complain of costs associated with the EU's climate change fight laid out in the Green Deal, which sets out agriculture regulations for the bloc's 27 members for decades. Quote, farmers are desperate in this hopeless situation and do not know what they should expect in the near future, let alone the distant one, AK President Jan Dolezal said last week. I wonder if he's related to Rachel Dolezal. Could be. She's white. She pretends to be black. Apparently she's got an OnlyFans now, too. Anyway, that's a different story. Well, maybe we'll bring that up on Fence Post Politics. In Slovakia, farmers were due to protest this week to push the government to help the sector, angry over late subsidies, uneven aid, or cheaper non-EU imports, including from Ukraine. Tractors took to the streets already on Monday, with TASR news agency reporting farmers had blocked the main border crossing between Ukraine and Slovakia for 1 hour. Earlier this month, Polish farmers blocked roads across the country and at border crossings with Ukraine, kicking off a month-long general strike to protest against EU policies. So, from what I gathered, Ukraine produces a ton of wheat. They are not in the EU. Like, they're working on becoming part of the EU. Probably we'll see how this war ends up, but I won't be surprised if at least part of what we now know as Ukraine ends up joining the EU. But all the other EU countries are, I mean, you kind of have to think of it like the U.S., like the United States government. So you have the 50 states, which have their own sets of laws, but then they're all governed under the umbrella of the U.S. Constitution, which is facilitated by the federal government, where these are all independent countries, which is what the states initially were in the United States. Still, a lot of people consider it that, but that's neither here nor there. But so you have all these independent countries like France, Germany, Spain, Slovakia, Czech Republic, Sweden, all of them. They have their own laws within their country, but then they're governed under the umbrella of the European Union, which acts like kind of like the federal government here, I suppose, is the best way I could put it. So, and this is from Euractiv News. Yeah, Euractiv.com. I've never read anything from here, but farmers in Eastern Europe set to protest as EU moves to extend Ukraine trade benefits. So Ukraine produces a lot of wheat. Traditionally, most of it goes to like Africa, but they're having this war, particularly over the Black Sea. Like, Ukraine wants Crimea back. Russia's not giving up Crimea. and there's essentially kind of a semi blockade on Ukraine in the Black Sea, which is where they would export their grain to Africa. Now they're selling it into the EU, and the EU is allowing it to essentially flood the European market, which drives the price of grain way down, and it hurts their own farmers. And that's what these protests are about. Plus all the climate change bullshit. They got rid of a diesel subsidy for farmers, and their input costs are going way up. So tensions are rising over the renewal of the EU's trade liberalization with Ukraine, with the European Commission meeting with neighboring countries on Tuesday, on the 20th, and a joint protest in Eastern Europe set to take place Thursday. Excuse me a minute. The EU is moving towards extending trade liberalization with Ukraine, the so-called autonomous trade measures, and many farmers have raised concern about Kiev's agricultural products flooding the EU market. Eastern Europe is the hot spot of the protests. Following blockades on the Ukrainian-Polish border, Slovak, Hungarian, Lithuanian, Latvian, and Czech farmers are coordinating with the Polish to take to the streets on Thursday. The EU-Ukraine cooperation platform set up in 2023 and bringing together Ukraine, Bulgaria, Hungary, Poland, Romania, Slovakia, and the European Commission will meet on Tuesday. These countries have been most affected by the influx of Ukrainian products with particular sensitivities around poultry, eggs, and sugar. I thought it would have been wheat, but I guess I was wrong. I shows you how much I know about European agriculture. As such, the EU executive introduced safeguard measures, including an emergency break in case the influx of those products from Kiev goes beyond the average import volumes in 2022 and 2023. Several EU farmers' organizations are calling for the extension of the safeguard to cereals, oilseeds, and honeys with a pre-war reference period. Contacts continue between the Commission and all the affected member states. European trade spokesman Olaf Gill said on Monday, adding that the group would try to find, quote, lasting medium to long-term solutions within the coordination platform. Forum was set up last June by the EU executive to, quote, improve the flow of trade along the corridors, end quote, in neighboring countries. To date, several unilateral bans on Ukrainian products remain in place in Slovakia, Hungary, and Poland. The first debate on the renewal of trade benefits took place on Monday in the Trade Committee at the European Parliament, where the rapporteur on the file, the European People's Party MEP Sandra Kalnite, presented a text without amendments to the Commission's proposal. So they're just wanting to just renew it, it sounds like. During the meeting, several MEPs questioned the timing of the Commission's proposal. The Commission prepared this proposal at the very last minute and threatened us with the prospect of the current measures expiring, said Marek Belka, vice president of the Socialists and Democrats Group for Trade. Similarly, Romanian EEP, MEP, oh, come on, Iuliu Winkler said the EU executive was late and invoking urgency. The possibility of improving the Commission's proposal without amendments has drawn sharp criticism from farmers' organizations across Europe. On Wednesday, it will be the turn of the EU countries to discuss the issue. According to the diplomatic sources, a wide majority of member states do not want to amend the proposal either. So they're just like, nope, we're helping Ukraine, and fuck you, farmers. That's we gotta stick with Ukraine. Anyways, it's pretty dicey over there. They those farmers are pissed. So it'll be really interesting to see how this all plays out. In the long run, the farmers win, but is it going to be the ones that are protesting now? I don't know. Like, hopefully they don't start throwing them in jail and shit. But at some point, they got to have food. And if you're driving them out of... And that's... It seems to be what the point of all this, like, the Green Deal initiatives there in the EU. Like, they're... huge focuses on agriculture and farming in particular. And like, where do you think your food comes from? It's astounding to me, but we'll see how it plays out. Even the world of agriculture is crazy as hell nowadays. So, something to take note of for the future, but, that's all I got for you this week. I'll try to put another one out next week. Should have Fence Post Politics, and yeah, we'll see what else we got for you on the menu. But thanks for tuning in. I appreciate you as always. This has been the Friggin' Farm and Ranch Report for Monday, February 19th, 2024. Now move your ass or burn in daylight.
Up in the morning, beneath the stars so bright, pull your hat down, make sure your cinch is tight. Horse is kind of snuffy, cold chill up your spine, it'll get your ass moving some, we're burning daylight. Burning daylight. Burning daylight. In the saddle till the job's done right. Burning daylight. Well, life is just a gather, and you won't catch them all. But when you ride through the gate, make sure you sit up tall. I can see the horizon, it's looking pretty bright. Well, get your ass moving, son, you're burning daylight. Burning daylight. Burning daylight. In the saddle till the job's done right.